Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm thrilled to be here today moderating today's webinar on Achieving Operational Excellence, Finding Efficiencies to Boost the Bottom Line. Finding an innovative way to optimize processes and efficiencies is key for any company looking to maximize its potential. Those kind of improvements immediately flow to the bottom line of a company and help boost its profits. I'm thrilled today to bring you a panel of experts from within the credit collection industry who are here to share how they actively and mindfully keep an eye on how to be as efficient as possible so they can maximize their profits. This webinar is being generously sponsored by the Intellitech Group. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts great webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Mark Boyd is the operations manager at JP Recovery Services and has accumulated 18 years of leadership experience in the ARM industry and national firms such as OSI, Transworld Systems, AMO Recoveries, and Asset Acceptance Capital Corporation. Since starting at JP Recovery Services in January 2011, Mark has advanced into his current role of operations manager, where he is responsible for the strategic and day-to-day production of services. In addition to being a certified Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, Mark is currently pursuing his MBA at Case Western Reserve University's Weatherhead School of Management. He is a 2016 Ontario Systems Hall of Fame Award recipient for innovation. Megan Bryant is the Director of Operations and Client Support at Credit Collection Partners. She started as a collector at CCP 9 years ago and has since moved her way up to her current position. Megan is all responsible for all employee incentives and all operations within the company. Tim Haig is the president at State Collection Service. He joined the company, which was founded by his grandfather, Hilding Haig, in 2009. Over the past several years, Tim has played a key role in State Collection Service's exceptional growth. During his tenure, the company expanded into two new locations, grew its staff by more than 300%, and continued garnering national attention as a receivables company of choice for major healthcare systems throughout the United States. Tim holds a degree in business management from Northern Michigan University. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and when the discussion is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. Finally, before we start our conversation today and bring on our panelists, I want to ask everybody to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. That email coming tomorrow will also include access to a free white paper from the sponsor of today's webinar, the Intellitech Group. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that's what you're looking for, like the topic we have today, and the speakers you want to hear from, such as the ones we have with us today. So thanks in advance for your participation. With that, let's move to the discussion portion of our event today. First, what I thought, because we're talking about excellence, I thought it might be helpful to sort of get a sense from each of the panelists that at least at an operational level, how do you define excellence? And Megan, since you're up on my screen right now, we're going to give you the honor of the first question.
How do I define excellence? Hold on. I thought Mark was going first on everything. I don't think it matters whose picture's up.
Nice try.
Organizational excellence. I think there are lots of different ways to define excellence. You know, we define it from a monetary, from, you know, organizationally as, you know, our employees. And I think the biggest thing is I find is success in organizational is our employees and their happiness and, you know, retention and client retention. You know, a big thing in clients, if your clients aren't happy, then obviously you're not going to have very much success within your organization. So I think those are a few of the things that I find to be the most important.
I'll add to that, Megan. I we have a saying here at State Collection Service: if you can measure it, we measure it. And so we have KPIs all over the place, and daily reports that are coming up. But the most important thing is, as you mentioned, Megan, is client satisfaction. Having a happy client is the most important thing for us. And even if that means, that it's not a great bottom line. My father has always had a saying that if the client is happy, the money will come. And I think that's something that we kind of live by. Staff is the other thing. Happy employees are the best employees. That's been my saying. And, we are a customer service business. And if I'm a client, do I want to have a bunch of upset, unhappy people talking to my, in our world, we're healthcare, so talking to their patients or anybody for that matter. So, and then I think the other thing is staying involved in the industry. There's a ton of technology out there, and being at the forefront of that allows us to get that great client satisfaction and also helps with the employee satisfaction.
I'll touch on the same points that Megan and Tim had mentioned. On our website, it specifically states, we pride ourselves on being a true all-encompassing revenue cycle organization designed to provide our clients with peace of mind. And then it says, at JPRS, we are committed to providing value through a positive payment experience. So not only making our clients happy, but also consumers happy as well. Tim mentioned we're in a customer service type of industry, and having positive interactions with consumers is very important. And as such, we feel it's very important that our agents are also, I don't want to say happy all the time, but that they have a positive employment experience with us as well. So again, much like Megan and Tim had said, it's happy clients, happy consumers, relatively happy consumers, and happy collectors as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Appreciate the insights. Tim, want to circle back to something you said, and then Mark echoed. Happy clients, happy employees are great goals and objectives. Happiness also is sort of like a subjective characteristic. With respect to the KPIs you were talking about, do you actually try and sort of, turn that into an objective data point with respect to clients or employees?
Yeah, from a client's standpoint, we have a weekly report that comes out through our client services department and our sales department. Also working with the operations people, but it's just as simple as a stoplight, red, yellow, and green. And so we have every single client on that list, and then we define what would cause a client to go to a yellow or a red. Those get sent out to the entire company on a weekly basis, and our goal is to keep those at 95% or better in green. And I'd say we're very tough on ourselves. We've gone in front of clients and told them they're currently sitting as a yellow client, and they'll come back and tell us by all means that we don't see us being a yellow client, so you shouldn't consider us yellow. But I think that's the important part. And then from a employee satisfaction standpoint, for many years now, we've utilized the Best Places to Work survey. And then we also do internal surveys on a quarterly basis. When we get the results of the annual survey, we spend a lot of time within our leadership team creating action plans and our goals to obviously improve those scores year over year. And actually, I'm pleased to say we've won that award 4 years in a row, and each year we have increased those scores. So having that baseline and having those action plans has been successful for us.
Awesome. Excellent. Thanks, Megan. Mark, anything you want to add in terms of how you might be able to turn happiness into an objective and quantifiable data point?
I know for us, we don't quantify their we don't have metrics to measure their, let's say, happiness. We, much like Tim, we participate in actually a local best places to work survey. And that actually includes not just debt collections or medical billing, which is what we also do, but it includes any employer that operates in the Cleveland, Ohio area. And we make it a point to place in one of those top workplaces. We believe that that attracts talent. And it also kind of breeds happiness amongst our associates, not only at the collector level, but also in our exempt level staff. So if we find that our metrics are falling off on that survey, then our HR department makes it a point to focus on the areas of opportunity identified in that survey. We pay for the feedback that we can get from the our local newspaper on that survey. And then we take action on those items where maybe we can, where it's possible to be flexible in certain areas. We have, for example, we allow flexible scheduling for our agents. We that we expect them to work 40 hours in a week, but from what we found with the, what I keep calling is the advent of cellular technology, evening primetime hours don't seem to be really evening primetime hours anymore. It has more to do with dialing strategy throughout the day because people have their phones tied to them now. So we were able to be flexible in that area and allow them to, you can come in when you want, you can leave when you want, but you have to put your 40 hours in for the week. And that was something that really helped us out in employee engagement.
How do you find that works for you, Mark, with the flexible scheduling like that?
Our associates get their time in. We are not terminating people for lates or anything like that. It's working. We feel that it works well for us because the way I put it is that we're getting the best 40 hours from that associate. So someone comes in, they're not feeling well, or they're just not feeling it for the day. We don't expect them to stick it out. You just need to keep in mind, you got to get your 40 hours in by the end of the week. And if you need to leave, then you need to leave. They need to handle personal things. They don't have to take time off. They're not burning through their paid time off. You know, as many of us are aware, agents tend to burn through their time off through the first quarter of the year. We don't have that happening. We have, and we have people getting their time in and we feel that they're more productive and they're more engaged while they're here too.
And Mike, going back to your original question, I think I understand what you were asking as a second point here is, happiness from our standpoint is seeing complaints, decrease. And so we obviously measure our complaints. And that number is a very, very small number. And then also, obviously, with lawsuits. But I think to Mark's point early on, he mentioned how important it is to treat the consumer the right way. And that is extremely important here at State Collection Service. And I think if you asked any employee, if it's their first day or if they've been with us for 20 plus years, the number one thing they would say is treating people the right way.
Excellent. Well, before we move on, there's a question that's come in, so we'll take a second to tackle it now and also use it as a reminder to ask anybody if you have a question for any of our panelists, please type it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll try and get to it before the hour is up. Mark, the question is, do you have coverage issues when they come and go as they please?
Now, we keep an eye on our, abandon rates, one metric that we take a look at, and we do not find that our abandon rates are skyrocketing. That being said, we do have an inbound IVR that helps to prevent lost inbound calls. We've got the IVR to handle the inbound call volume, and when they are passing through our IVR, we find that our agents are not losing those calls. And that's just one metric that we take a look at. Additional, sure. Another metric I take a look at throughout the day is our right party contact rate throughout the day. For every operator hour, how many right party contacts are we making? And I don't see any drop off in those numbers, at least from my analysis. I have not seen the number of associates or whether scheduled throughout the day creating a huge impact for us. We may not be typical, But we know in our environment, in our area, what we're working is that we're not seeing a big impact in our right party contact rates, or like I said, our inbound abandon rates based on staffing issues.
Excellent. Great. Thank you very much for the answer. Before we move on to the next topic for our panelists, I want to pause the discussion briefly, and I'd like to invite Daniel Houston from the IntelliTech Group to come and say a few words as a sponsor for today's event. Daniel?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Great to be here today, and we're definitely speaking our language here, my language of finding efficiencies to boost the bottom line. As mentioned, I'm with the IntelliTech Group. We've been around in the industry for the last 20 years, and we really strive to help agencies work smarter. So we have a variety of different tools that we leverage to help us do that, to kind of stick away or shy away from gut instincts or opinion-based processes and really become more data-driven. So a few of the tools we leverage would be data enrichment to your accounts, as well as scoring or segmenting your account. So what we typically find with our clients is about a quarter of your inventory is bringing in more than 60% of your revenue. So we're not only finding those accounts, but then we assign strategies. So we have each one of our clients has a consultant assigned to them. So it's more of a hand-holding process or a partnership to achieve those great things instead of it being dropped off on your doorstep. So following this webinar today, you'll receive a white paper, as Mike mentioned, that'll come from Mike. As you review it and have questions or any interest, I encourage you to reach out to us, and we'd be happy to show you what we do, and we're looking forward to it. With that, I will turn it back over to you, Mike.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks again to the IntelliTech Group for sponsoring today's webinar. Mark, one more question. There's a lot of interest today in your scheduling. So before we move on, what are your operational hours that the agents may work?
I opened up a can of worms, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
We are open 8 to 8 Eastern. Most of our clients are Eastern. A couple are some of them. We're expanding westward. We have actually quite a few more Central. But we found, again, that it's, in my opinion, and I have data to support my opinion from our environment, morning prime time, evening prime time. When I was a collector, I started off on the phones. That wasn't a very important thing. But I'm not seeing the effectiveness of morning and evening prime time anymore.
No, and I would have to agree with you on that, because we've done the extended evening hours and then also, you know, Saturday hours. And As much as you would think, you know, people are home in the evening or on the weekends to answer the phone and stuff, we don't find it to be worth our while at all.
Exactly. We did an analysis on Saturday recoveries. Mm-hmm. And we stopped working Saturdays because it's just not profitable. I mean, we're here to make a profit. And if you find that you're not, then why continue doing something? We used to use the mantra because that's the way we've always done it. But that's not the way that it necessarily should continue. So take a look at your data. If it's not supporting the way that you've always done it, then think outside the box. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Things are changing. You know, there's a lot of compliance things happening, but you know, if you don't need to work, you don't need to work Saturdays, then don't work Saturdays. It just doesn't make sense. So
yeah, and the only exception we take to those rules are tax time. the time of year we all love.
Oh yeah, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Let's shift the discussion briefly and move on. You know, from a high level, there's basically two ways for a company to make more money: either increase revenue or decrease expenses. And so I'm curious, since we're talking about achieving excellence and being more efficient, let's look at this from the expense side of the equation for a little bit and maybe talk about what are some of the expenses that a collection operation may be overlooking as a way of trimming how much they're spending and thus maybe cutting back and adding more to their bottom line. Mark, we'll let you go first this time.
Oh, great. Okay. Initiation. okay. So about 70% of our outbound dials per day are to cellular devices. Obviously, we cannot use any TDS to make those phone calls. We are, we're using technology that assists us in making those outbound manual dials to cellular phones. So I would strongly, strongly urge anyone that is out there that is making traditional manual dials, and I term anything where they're actually dialing the number themselves. If you have your agents making manual dials themselves, initiating themselves, take a look at some technologies that will help you improve that dialing efficiency. You know, you don't need operators to initiate all those calls. There's technology that can help you do that. The other items that we take a look at, skip tracing. Not all clients are created equal. We all know that some clients in our client bases will get better returns on. Use data to determine which clients and carefully select what segments you will expend money on. We have one client, I won't name them, but we don't do any batch skip tracing for them because we found over months we are literally getting nothing back in return from skip tracing for them. And that effort we are then able to expend on other clients that we are getting those returns on. But we're only doing that after we take a look at the data. And then our final part is about 95%, 98% of our business is medical. We have an insurance scrub at new business placement. It is very expensive. It is very new for us, but we're keeping an eye on that as well. Why send a letter out? Why make a phone call to someone when there's actually insurance that should have been billed? So we're expending money, but we're also saving money with the anticipated benefit of greater recoveries as a result of it. But along the way, we are measuring everything that we're doing. You know, Tim mentioned that it had their mantra is that they have to be able to measurement. And that's our thing too. It used to be gut instinct, but it hasn't been that way for quite a while. We need to be able to measure the outcomes of our processes and our changes and our improvements.
And I'll kind of piggyback, if you don't mind, onto that. We do a lot too of watching, you know, we're integrated with a few different skip tracing vendors, and we spend a lot of time on, you know, scoring and meddling our phone numbers so that we don't spend a lot of extra time and, you know, employee hours calling numbers that don't need to be called. And along those same lines, we also are integrated with solutions by text, in which I'm not plugging at all. I'm just saying, so we do a lot of, you know, texting instead, once we get them to opt in instead. So we do reminders via text, you know, your payment plan broke via text, all of that. We also do email opt-ins because, you know, all of those different, all of texting and, you know, also with VoApps, we're integrated with them. So we drop VoApps. All of those different kinds of methods to reach people are so much cheaper than your traditional having your collector sit there. And, you know, even though we have a dialing system, you know, having it dial out. But if we can reach them without actually having to sit, pick up the phone, call them, find out why they're broken, you know, all of that, it has been tremendous for our company. And I think that our consumers like it better also, because this day and age, nobody wants to talk on the phone. I know I don't. I'll watch mine ring and then text you back, do you need something, you know, like. But so I think in those different ways, we've seen a definite decrease in our expenditures, just reaching people in different cheaper avenues.
And to piggyback on that, just in summary of that, for those out there, call centers, as we could be called, call centers are trying to find a way to avoid making calls. And that's the way that things are moving.
Yeah, I agree with that comment, of course, and everything else that was said. But, you know, our three biggest expenses are the three P's, postage, people, and phones. I think, you know, from the email and the texting, that is the way to reduce that postage. So we are also doing that in the process of actually implementing a lot more of that. So that was interesting to hear from you, Megan. From the phones standpoint, I think just off of Mark's comment, we are making a lot less phone calls today than we were last year and the year before that. And part of that is better skip tracing, getting the right numbers as was mentioned, but also, you know, just using our scoring and segmentation, we're doing a lot with that, with the analytics side of it, to make sure that we're just calling numbers that we believe that we can connect with. Yeah. I think that's also a strategy we've done to hope to help the call blocking strategies that are out there, and we have seen our contact rates go up, and so that's a good thing. And then from a people standpoint, obviously, we are a call center, we are customer service, but we are trying to do more with less. And I think hiring the right people that are going to stick around, paying fair wages to reduce turnover has been a big help for us. And then also giving the consumer the option to self-service. And so we're trying to drive more and more people to the portal. We've seen a large increase over the last 3 years of that. And so with that, we've been able to reduce staff. And I think that's been a real big key for us.
The self-service portal is a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's something that we keep an eye on every day. We're the product that we're using. We keep an eye on consumer activity. So how many portal logins were created each day you get, and you can see by that activity what consumer preferences are turning to. I think that even more people would look forward to, in particular younger generations, would look forward to seeing a quick payment by text message. You know, send them a link, takes you to the payment portal, and they make a quick payment that way. Even take a snapshot of their credit card or their debit card, and it makes a quick payment that way. That would be just wonderful. And I know that consumers would look for that too.
Yeah, and we just implemented a link in our actually in our text messages, so our agents can send a text message to the consumer, and straight from the text message, there's a link that logs them straight into the portal.
Isn't that great?
It's that's how I want to operate. You know, I try to think like, how do I want to pay my bills? How do I want to, you know, I don't want to talk to somebody. I don't want to, you know, that's perfect. That's what
Absolutely.
People want, I think. But
yes, I agree.
No, yeah, and I mean that's a good point, Megan. I mean, you know, me being the romantic person, I just ordered my wife flowers, and I did that right before this call, and I did it from my phone. It's got all my credit card information in there. It's got her work address, which I would not have known, and I was able to type a quick message, and the whole process took me under a minute. And they're on their way, and I'll have a happy wife. So wish you a happy life, you know. It is. I mean, it's just to make it easy and not to have to talk to us anymore. And it's an embarrassment. I mean, I don't want to talk to somebody about my finances, a stranger about my finances, what I can afford to pay, what I can't, and all of those types of things. It's uncomfortable. We want to make it more comfortable for the consumer.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask this question knowing full well I'm kind of oversimplifying, but I'm doing it in the interest of not trying to look like an idiot, but start a discussion. But does that mean that sort of the ultimate goal of a call center is to not have any calls? Is that what everybody's kind of working toward? Is that how you could define excellence for a call center in the future?
Call when you need to. You have to be prepared. You have to be prepared to adapt to consumers' preferences. Some people, even the same consumer, could change their preference. So, you know, everyone likes to talk about millennials. They just want text messages. We talk to millennials, and they pay over the phone. So I think you have to be flexible. And that may, as a result, necessity, you won't need as much staff because you're doing more text messaging or more emailing, or maybe you're making phone calls that's nowhere nearly as many as you used to. So I think flexibility is key. Developing a good omni-channel communication strategy is important to adapt to our changing environment.
I'd just add to that that, yeah, I mean, reducing phone calls will never go away. There are still people that want to be heard, and there will always be somebody that wants to be heard. We have a lot of complicated situations that, you know, take a long time. We might be working with an individual and the insurance company on a three-way call. Those can be time-consuming, but at the end of the day, if we're able to to get that person the insurance to cover it and or financial assistance, or we can come out as the hero. Now, on the flip side, we also have people that just want to call to complain. And I almost was going to swear for you, Mike, and I was going to say bitch, because they call the bitch, because you said that I was okay to swear. So I did. I accomplished the first time.
That's a dollar in the jar, Tim. That's a dollar in the jar.
All right. So we had a little fun for the first 10 minutes before everybody else joined. But, you know, but if you have somebody that is calling to complain, the main objective is to have the information there to take care of the issue. And hopefully they end that call and we've changed their mind. And we have a lot of those. So phone calls won't go away, but yeah, we definitely want to reduce.
Machines can't handle, an IVR can't properly handle an emotional consumer. So to kind of piggyback off that topic, I think training for your agents needs to shift to being able to handle those things that they need to be able to handle. We need them to be able to handle emotional consumers, whether they're upset or they're crying, they're angry, being able to handle that. That's where we really need our agents to step in.
Agreed.
Here's a question that came in. What do you have your collectors focusing on if the goal is to not or have them on the phone as little as possible?
Well, I'll kind of answer that. Even if, I'm sure this is kind of a business standard, but, when our collectors go through their work lists, so, their broken promises and all of that, and they're not, their focus on the very first call is to try and make sure they don't have to talk to that person again. So if you're not getting it paid in full or whatever, get their email, get them to opt into text, like that. So when our agents, if they're not on the phone, that's what they're doing. They're texting, they're emailing, they're, checking up on accounts to see if the clients have said anything. So, I mean, I think they stay busy even when they're not on the phone doing things that help them stay off the phone, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There are still phone calls to be made. We are not at the point where, we have so much opt in the text messaging and emailing that we don't need to make phone calls. I don't want to misrepresent what our strategy is. Our agents are making phone calls. And much like Megan, our emphasis is on first call resolution, getting them to opt in to an alternate channel of communication, making them aware that we have a consumer portal if they'd like to use that, to submit their insurance information after hours or to make a payment. So, yes, our agents are still making phone calls and plenty of them, but there is definitely this shift in preparation for a total change in communication preferences, and that's where we're going.
Yeah, I would only add, I agree with what you both said, and I think the most important thing is that first phone call is fact-finding. And, if we can determine that this individual, this consumer, has no ability to pay, why continue to bother that person? So let's get that fact finding. Let's get it out of the way. That might sound bad to a client, but at the same time, if that's going to reduce a complaint, if you continue to call somebody that we know doesn't have the ability, that's just going to lead to a complaint, lawsuit, so on and so forth.
Yeah, you got to spend your time. Your one of your biggest expenses, I think, across the board for all of us, is our payroll expense.
Yep.
So why expend that money on people that they're just not going to pay? So yes, absolutely. To your point, Tim, you have to focus on the right people at the right time. And if they're not going to pay, then yes, absolutely, just get it out of the way and move on to the next one.
We mentioned a lot of the different expenses. Is there a benefit or to collection agencies benchmarking themselves against their peers you know, with respect to payroll or other expense items, just to sort of see where they might be able to improve their bottom lines? Is that something any of you have done, thought about doing, tried to do, think is a good idea or a bad idea?
I think, I mean, that's how other companies and other industries do it. They benchmarking is something that analysts do for publicly traded companies all the time. Now, many of us are privately owned. The income statements aren't available, but you know, what about companies that may be publicly? That's something that I have thought about. Yes, you know, taking a look at publicly traded companies and taking a look at not at the. Don't get me wrong. The dollars alone we would probably be overwhelmed by that, but the percentages, taking a look at those and their operations, absolutely. You know, that's something I think that there's value in doing that.
Yeah, I'll add, I have quite a bit of experience with this, and I'd just say, if you're not doing this today, and you're an owner or an executive of the company, find a group of trustworthy people and do it. So our company, we actually have three benchmark groups. We have an owner's group, we have an operational group, and then I've just recently started another one, a smaller one, with three other individuals that are close friends of mine that are in the industry. We've known each other for a long time. We share full financials. We just met about 2 weeks ago. And to your point, you know, one of the agencies, we were looking at just percentage of revenue spent on postage. And ours was about 6 or 7 times what theirs was. But they're in a different business, different industry. They get all of their emails up front from their clients, and they're doing probably 90% or 95% of their business is an email. And we're not there yet. We're moving our ways, but now moving towards that. But now I have that benchmark to get to and that goal to strive to. So that's a big thing that we're looking at for 2020. And we have all kinds of other discussions other than just finances, but hiring strategies, retention strategies, training strategies. So we typically meet offsite for a 2-day period. And we create an agenda ahead of time. And then throughout the year, we usually meet 2 to 3 times a year. And throughout the year, we're emailing each other questions probably on a weekly basis.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you for sharing. There's a popular business maxim or strategy that companies should sort of stick to their core skill sets and outsource that which is not a core competency. I know we've talked a little bit about some of the different vendors out there that are possible partners. I'm wondering if any of you have any additional recommendations for areas of a collection operation that might be better suited to being outsourced that maybe aren't being outsourced right now.
If technology is not your strong point, so for example, it's something that you're not going to be handling day in and day out. It's maybe a one-off type of job. Then yes. Sort of for example, I had an associate that was working here. He just so happened to be very familiar with Visual Basic and creating applications, and he created applications that would move our files around for us, which was great. But eventually he moved on, which is good for him, but not so great for us. We didn't have anyone here to maintain those applications, ensure that they were functioning or expand their capability. So finding an outside vendor that could handle those types of things for us, that was useful. It's not a full-time job for our company. We don't need someone in a full-time role, but we find a vendor that can do something such as that. And now we don't have to have FTE moving files around or something like that when it can just be done by an application.
Yeah, I know from our company standpoint, we integrate with every possible person or company out there that we can, that we know is going to, you know, save us time and money. We recently just integrated with another company that helps our collectors. You know, we were finding that even after training, and we're in a kind of different, you know, we do government debt. So it's a little bit different in training when it comes to like medical or, you know, your mom and pop shop or whatever. But we were finding that so many things changed so fast that we were having trouble keeping up with the training or the continued education. So we just integrated with a new company that, you know, is real time. It listens and it's wonderful. You know, something, it can hear the debtor come up and say something and boom, it's got an answer for our collectors just to always keep them, you know, knowing what they're supposed to say. So I think anytime you can, and obviously, you know, cost is a big part of that. But anytime you can integrate anything like that to save yourself time, save your company time, you know, help your employees, make sure that your clients know that you're being compliant. I think anytime like that, you know, you should take advantage of that.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, in our industry, I mean, I think all of us, for the most part, outsource. Obviously, letters, skip tracing, our software, a lot of, you know, most all of our technology, our scoring. You know, I think most recently for us, we were really after looking for some data scientists, and those people are not cheap whatsoever. But we found a partner that we have now access to not just one, but three data scientists. And from an analytics standpoint, we do have an internal team. They're very intelligent people. They have a lot of good ideas, but we wanted to bring in kind of an outsider's thought, somebody that wasn't used to the industry, but knows data. And so that's been, we're kind of in test phase now. We don't have any results to that, but we should have probably in the next 90 to 120 days.
I think that's just a technology that's going to be very important for our industry. The big topics, the buzzwords now are artificial intelligence, and as a subset of that, machine learning. Mm-hmm. And I've seen lots of demos on, I've attended demos on this, classes on it, and it's, I really feel that there's an opportunity for our industry. And like Tim mentioned, hiring someone like that is not cheap. But there's, I think that it's just going to be someplace where we need to go to remain competitive.
Artificial intelligence is amazing. Expensive.
Yes, it is. It's new. It's new. Yeah, absolutely. It's new. It's the shiny new thing out there.
Yeah, it's the 2020.
Yeah, it's and because it's new, it's expensive, but over time, the cost will come down, but so smaller agencies, it may not be practical for them, something such as that, but it's something to keep an eye on. You know, what vendors are out there that are beginning to utilize these new technologies and new analytical machines at their disposal. I mean, I went and I did my Lean Six Sigma, which is very analytical, data-driven, and then, you know, now it's machine learning. We'll have the machines that'll do all of it for us. So so I'm like, well, why did I go and do this Lean Six Sigma thing? But no, it's exciting. It's exciting to see what machines are capable of doing and how they can provide additional insight into your operations.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, Tim mentioned it and we just talked a little bit about the future. So let's look as companies are starting to budget and plan for 2020, which is just around the corner. I think we're less than 100 days now to next year. Is there anything on the horizon that the company should be excited about or concerned about as it relates to their overall performance? Everyone can take a quick look into their crystal ball and we'll write things down and hold people to them, whatever forecasts or predictions you're about to make.
Mark?
Mark?
Oh, boy. Here we go again. First webinar. All right. So actually, one of the exciting things we just finished talking about, artificial intelligence, machine learning. I think those are things to keep an eye on. I can't say that by next year they're going to be widespread or affordable for everybody, but they're things to keep an eye on. I think you're going to see larger agencies beginning to implement those tools in their operations. I think everyone needs to keep an eye on the notice of proposed rulemaking. Those could present challenges for us operationally, depending on what the final rules are, but we'll have plenty of time to adapt to those and plan around them.
Well done. Tim, Megan, anything else you want to add on top of that? We'll just say Mark said it.
Mark said it.
Yeah, no, I'll just add that, I mean, with the proposed CFPB rules, I'll speak for myself, but I'm pleased with them. I know there'll still be changes if they ever get rolled out. That would be a nice thing. But I think that the new methods of communication that we talked about, so it just goes back to the omni-channel. Giving the consumers the option to self-service, but also to pick the way they want to communicate. So, from the people that I know that do a lot of the texting and a lot of the emails, and I'll knock on wood, but they have very, very few complaints. People don't want to be bothered on their phone. And it's just like we've talked, and Megan already said, don't call her, text her. So take note of that. Don't ever call Megan. She's not going to answer it. But I'm the same way. If you're not in my contact list on my phone, if it's a random number, I'm not going to answer it. I'm going to wait for a voicemail, or I'm going to wait for a follow-up text or an email. So I think those are probably the things that we're investing the most in.
Yeah, and if you guys have, I don't mind, I'm not sure how many out there do or not, but if you've ever used the two-way texting portal, you would be amazed. So our collectors can send out the text. They're pre-designated what they include and everything. They don't just freelance text. That would be a nightmare. And I get the luxury of texting them back. But I'm telling you, sometimes it'll be 12, 15 texts when it could have been a 2-minute phone call, but they don't want the 2-minute phone call. They'd rather text me 15 times. It's a great tool. The texting is a great tool. The voicemail drops, great tool. You know, we love all of that.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, just a reminder, we've got about 10 minutes left. There's a couple of questions here in the queue that we're going to get to. But if you have a question for any of our panelists, this will probably be your last chance to get it in, and we'll try and get to it before we run out of time. One other thing I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about, obviously, compliance tends to get much of the attention these days, and rightfully so, but how can agencies sort of make sure they aren't overspending on compliance or overlooking other areas of growth? And I imagine someone's going to say, well, you can't spend too much on compliance, so I'll say it first, but give each of you a chance to maybe share thoughts on managing expenses within the compliance department, and whether that's something that can be done or not.
Sure it can be done.
I think that's the great chance. I think you can't avoid it. If you're talking about operations, you can't avoid also talking about compliance. I mean, you could have any number of great ideas that, you know, you're ready to implement or pull the trigger on. And then the question is, well, what type of risk is this going to create for us? So what we do is, I mean, you know, we have to manage our compliance costs. I think there are a lot of factors that go into that, but one of them we already spoke about was engaged agents, satisfied agents that are less likely to generate consumer complaints. You develop a new strategy. You shouldn't be hesitant to develop new strategies or new processes just because of the potential compliance concerns that you may have. Run your process by someone that's an expert, whether that's your own in-house counsel or you have someone externally that you do that through. But run those processes through that person and get their thoughts on and the potential risks that those pose. And get many opinions on them. You know, what are your thoughts? Because there's going to be someone that's going to think of something that the other two people couldn't think of. So don't be afraid to implement. I guess in summary, don't be afraid to plan or implement new technologies or new processes, but do check with the compliance people to make sure that you're not creating more risk for your company.
Great advice.
Yeah, I'll just add, I think, you know, it's playing by the rules. And, you know, we've always had a stance of, you know, if it's on the edge, we want to be on the farthest away from that and stay out of trouble. And I think that's kind of why when I mentioned the new proposed rules, I'm kind of looking forward for those to come out. I mean, if they tell us what to do, we'll do it. And if you have less gray areas, that's fine. And I think it's, you know, going back to the very beginning of the conversation, talking about treating the people, you know, treating the consumers the right way. If you're making, you know, 15, 20 calls to that same consumer on a daily basis, of course, they're going to complain and they're going to start writing letters to CFPB, to the AG's office, everything else like that. You know, and so I think it's going back to playing by the rules. Mike, you had the article just a week or two, of the judgment out in California for $267 million.
Yep.
You're gone. You're done. So compliance is extremely important. Every single year it becomes more and more important, and that's not going to change. And that is something we do measure to see what percentage of our revenue is going to compliance. I think we are okay overspending in that area as long as it's not paying out settlements.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. We've got a few minutes left and a few questions, slightly off topic, but definitely sort of in reference to some things that were mentioned today. So let's see if we can try and get through these. I think, Megan, with respect to what you're doing with VoApps and direct route voicemails, what numbers are you putting through there and any compliance concerns about using the technology?
No. So we have different strategies we use for what numbers we include on our VoApps drops. Different, you know, most of it is based off of scoring, meddling, you know, the higher propensity rate numbers that we put there. And no, we haven't had any issues, any compliance issues. We haven't had any complaints. We've actually had nothing but, you know, we'll drop a VoApps on somebody and next thing I know, I'm getting a text, thanks for the voicemail, my payment, put my payment in the mail today. So from our our consumers, they tend to love it. But as far as what phone numbers we put through, it really depends. We base it mainly off when the last time they've had what. I mean, there's so many different metrics. You know, have we had an RP? Have we, you know, so many different metrics that we kind of figure out. And generally, our biggest drop day is Fridays. We drop somewhere 63,000 VoApps maybe on a Friday. And that makes, you know, Fridays are good days. People get paid Fridays. So we find that Fridays are the best day to collect. So that's when we do a majority of our dropping. But it is a great tool. And no, we haven't had any complaints, no compliance issues.
Yeah, I think, Megan, would you agree with the statement that it's not always what tools you use, but how you use them?
Oh, absolutely. And we've spent a lot of money with our skip tracing vendors and, you know, scoring and meddling and prioritizing and a lot of that to make sure that we're not, you know, we don't want to blow grandma and SSI up over $100 bill. You know, we want to blow up the attorney that forgot he had a DUI 20 years ago and needs to pay. I mean, and I don't mean attorney. I just meant, you know what I mean.
Yes.
So yeah, we spend a lot of time and a lot of money making sure that these resources, we're using them on the right people.
Got it. Okay. A question. How do you obtain consent to text or email while being on the phone? Is it obtainable on the phone or by mail after the call?
No, so great question. And we did a lot of compliance checking when we implemented this, and we've been doing it for quite a while now. So with our texting, what we do is while we're on the phone with them, we send them an opt-in text. Now, you know, you've got to have somebody that knows they can talk on their phone while looking at their text, but most of the time it works out okay. We send an opt-in text. That text gives them a 5-digit code. We input the 5-digit code into our collection software, and boom, they're opted in. They do have the option at any time to text back stop, and it will automatically opt them out. So they are agreeing to the terms. Just like with the email, we send an opt-in email. It has a link. Once that they click that link, they have opted themselves in. So from a compliance standpoint, we've given it all to them to do. So we're good there. And just like the text messages, they can opt out of emails at any time also.
The other strategy with text messaging is, and you need to check with your compliance counsel on this, but to get their level of comfort, but adding the opt-in option to your letters to text.
Right.
Excellent. I also wanted to mention that we're doing a webinar tomorrow, coincidentally enough, on skip tracing best practices. And we're doing a webinar on Thursday on email and texting, and making sure you're doing it the right way. So I hope everyone kind of signs up for those if you haven't done so already. We've just got a couple minutes left, but before we wrap up, what I'd like to do is go around the panel and give each of you a chance to summarize your thoughts, maybe offer any key takeaways for based on the discussion, or bring up something you didn't get a chance to mention but wanted to because the discussion didn't sort of get in that direction, but you still thought it was worthwhile. Just a chance to share any parting words of wisdom if you want. Tim, would you mind going first?
Well, I think this has been a great discussion. It's, I think, pretty obvious that we're all kind of rowing in the same direction, and that's really looking to utilize more technology and use the people where they're absolutely needed. I mean, I think the key words are the texting, the email, overall the self-servicing, the omni-channel. So I think it's no secret that's what we have to do to be successful. And our clients demand a lot from us today. Mike, you and I had a conversation prior to this about that. And the other thing they do is they want us to do all this work at a lot less cost. And in order to do that, we have to find ways to still be, you know, profitable and stay in business.
Well said. Thank you. Megan?
I agree with everything that was said. I think it is important to sit back and kind of look at the different options, you know, look at the text messaging, the emails, the VoApps, you know, all of those different, yeah, they may cost you some, you know, out the gate with integration and everything, but I feel like that's the way our world is going, and we've got to be ready and prepared to, you know, spend a little to get a lot.
Well said. Mark, you get the honor of the last word today.
Oh, finally, I get to be the last person. I thought Tim was going to defer to me. At the risk of sounding cliche, the only constant for us seems to be change. Things are constantly changing. So be prepared to adapt. Like Tim said, clients are expecting more, lower contingency rates, compliance expectations are changing, and we have to be able to adapt. But, you know, we work in an industry with a lot of hardworking people, adaptable people, and we provide a valuable service, not only to our clients, but to other consumers as well. So, you know, stick with it. Stay strong and you know, reach out to your peers if you got questions or you want to bounce something off of anybody. We're all here for each other to a point.
Agreed.
Well, excellent. Before I let everybody go, Megan, Mark, Tim, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. This was a great discussion, and there's a lot of great information. So on behalf of everybody who benefited from today, which is everybody who listened, thank you so much. You guys were awesome. Really appreciate it. Also wanted to thank the Intellitech Group one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.intellitechgroup.com, excuse me, to learn more about the company. Also be on the lookout in your email inbox tomorrow for a link to their white paper that we'll be sending out. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A final reminder to fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar, and feel free to share any ideas for topics or speakers that you want to hear about in the future. A recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net hopefully by the end of the day. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the near future. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. Panel, awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.